Hello and welcome to the Keep a Cup podcast. Chad Young, joined by Pete Ball. And we missed you last week. Had some travel, couldn't quite make it work. We are now, almost 3 weeks into the season. We're recording this on Sunday the 14th, end of, I guess, the second full week of the season. And, Pete, the idea for this episode was your idea, but I'm so with you because everything I read about baseball right now, everything I hear about baseball is like, this pitcher's hurt. This pitcher's going to get hurt. This pitcher had a great start, but when is he going to get hurt? And I'm over all the negativity, and I want to focus on some good things because there's some exciting stuff happening out there.
Yeah, no doubt. You're right. I mean, I thought I read that it's like the same number of Tommy Johns as in years past. It's just the names are more high profile. You know, I could be wrong on that. But if that is the truth, it kind of explains it, right? You know what? We all still have to play. So you're in a league. If you lost a player, you got to figure it out. So let's focus on what's going well and try and build up these guys that are off to some hot starts.
Yeah, totally. And so what we are going to do today is we're going to go through, I think, 8 players. Hopefully we're going to get through all 8 who are the opposite of injured or the opposite of falling apart or the opposite of their velocity is down. These are guys who are off to great starts. I don't want to promise it'll be all sunshine and rainbows. There's probably some guys we're going to talk about that one or both of us are sort of like, I'm not sure I buy into this, but we're at least going to focus on some exciting positive news, guys who are doing some stuff that we like to see. Before we get to that, this is episode 132. And that gets to jersey number 32. And that's an interesting one because it's apparently a pitcher number because the top guys throughout this list are, if you sort by war on Baseball Reference, number one is Steve Carlton. Then you get some guys like Tim Raines, Al Simmons, Dave Winfield comes up a little later, like who wore it for part of a career. But in terms of guys who wore it for most or all their career, you got Steve Carlton first, Roy Halladay second. Then it goes down quite a bit to Sandy Koufax, Dennis Martinez, who wore it for 13 years, which was not all of his career. That's sort of the list of guys who wore it meaningfully. So it's really a question of which pitcher you like. And I can make a vote for almost any of these guys because they all have good cases to be made for all of them, at least for me.
for me, it's Roy Halladay. Growing up fan of a team in the AL East and, that guy, Doc, was incredible. Obviously rest in peace, unfortunately, going early. Roy Halladay for me. And I see Derek Lowe down there, Red Sox legend, Derek Lowe, wearing number 32. He'd get some love from me as well.
Yeah, I mean, Carlton is clearly sort of the best of these guys in terms of what he did for his career. Mm-hmm. Halladay second, and for, Carlton, I caught the very, very, very tail end of Carlton's career. He pitched 1 year for Cleveland when I was 5.
I didn't know that.
That was how he ended his career. I barely caught it, but nothing particularly interesting. Talked about Halladay. I had all the same, I wasn't an AL East fan, but the same thing, sort of core baseball years for me. But then Koufax, growing up as a Jewish baseball fan, Koufax was a guy that I always looked up to, was always one of my favorites. And Dennis Martinez was on, he only pitched 3 years in Cleveland, but it was 94, 95, 96, which was, 94 was the year that the new stadium opened and like things were turning around. The future suddenly looked bright. And then he was there in 95 for the World Series run. 96 was still sort of the middle of that incredible 90s run for Cleveland. So yeah, I'm okay with it being Halladay though. I think he combination of talent and era is the right fit for us. So we'll call this the Roy Halladay episode.
Nice.
I'm happy with that. So we should then jump into, we're going to skip over to the news. Usually we would start with, there's some news and notes and blah, blah, blah. But like all the news is like, this guy's hurt. This guy's hurt. This guy's hurt. That's not what we're here to talk about. We're going to go to something else. And Pete, why don't you kick us off? You got a couple of middle infielders you're excited about. I'm gonna have you start actually with one of them. I'm gonna have you start with C.J. Abrams because you've been touting this guy for a while, and it's all coming together for C.J.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it might be happening. So if folks don't remember, C.J. Abrams was part of that key return for Juan Soto. You know, he was a prospect with the Padres, and him and Mackenzie Gore, and I can't remember who that third prospect was, went over to the Nationals. And before this trade, yes, that's right, Robert Hassel. Before this trade, he was a top 10 prospect in baseball, kind of consensus, like the whole time. He was a first-round pick, all that stuff. And then he just got off to a really slow start to start his career. You know, I'm pulling up the stats right now. It felt like a lot of people just kind of like gave up on him pretty quickly, or at least as like as somebody who could enter fantasy relevancy. It just felt like, oh no, it's too far away. There's not a lot of stock to put in this kid now. But he had a pretty solid, I mean, it was brief, but solid minor league career. He didn't really strike out. He posted decent WRC pluses. It just, once he reached the majors, he's hitting the ball too softly. He couldn't hit a lick versus lefties, which might still be a problem. We'll talk about that in a second. And ultimately, he just kind of fell flat on his face during his early times there, you know, very, very briefly with the Padres and then early with the Nationals back in 2022. But something changed for him in the second half last year. And everybody's heard about this by now, so we don't need to dive too deep into his second half of 2023. And it's not like he turned into Ronald Acuna or something, but he slashed the K rate. He increased his walk rate. And he stole 33 bases in 35 attempts during the second half last year. He finished the year with 47 steals. So far this year, like, why should I be excited about him? Well, he's 5-for-14 versus lefties, which, it's a tiny sample. It's still much better than obviously what he was pacing to do the last two seasons. That does include 6 strikeouts. It includes no walks. So take it with a grain of salt. But even that aside, I mean, he's just in his age 23 season. His average exit velocity right now is 92.5, which, it's very early to be looking at average exit velocity, but still that would be significantly higher than it's been in the past. The K rate is up, but so is the walk rate. And his expected WOBA to this point is 416. He had a 202 expected batting average versus breaking balls last year compared to a 453 so far this season. So maybe something's changed with that approach. Although again, sample size matters here, but I mean, he's just hitting better. He's hitting the ball in the air way more than he ever has in the past. And his pull rate is crazy right now, 54.5. So even if those numbers come down a little bit, including the average exit velocity, the pull rate, how much he's hitting it in the air, and how much harder he's hitting it combined with the speed, all of a sudden you start seeing a ceiling of a first-round pick. Now, I'm not saying that's what he's going to be, but in the early going, combined with what he did in the second half last year, combined with the prospect pedigree, I'm all of a sudden getting even more excited about C.J. Abrams than I have been in the past.
Yeah, I totally see that. And I think I'll start off by saying I'm excited about what Abrams is doing. I'm interested in Abrams. I'm excited. Like, I like what I'm seeing. You know how I feel about those high pull rates, right? We talked about this with Itzhak Paredes at other times. Like, talked about it with Jose Ramirez, like guys who can get out and pull the ball can outperform their quality of contact by simply making, you know, more pulled contact. So I really like seeing that. I do want to take a moment to look at some concerning underlying numbers for Abrams. You mentioned the strikeout rate. It is way up. It's up above, you know, you talked about we cut it in the second half last year. It is up above where it was in the first half last year. The thing that concerns me, though, is he is chasing a lot more than he did last year. Last year, his chase rate, 38.6%. This year, 46.7%. And he's swinging in the zone a lot less, 72.3% down to 64.4%. So that increased chase rate isn't just like he's being more aggressive and he's, you know, he's letting it rip earlier in the pitch. And like, those are things that will happen. Like, you want to get out in front of a ball, you have to make your decisions quicker. You start swinging more often. You chase more. But if you're chasing more and also swinging in the zone more, and so you're taking more aggressive swings, like I can see that piecing together into something interesting. Instead, he's swinging more out of the zone. He's making more contact out of the zone. He's swinging less in the zone and making less contact in the zone. And all of that gives me real concerns about that strikeout rate maybe getting even worse than it is, because right now what he's relying on is that out of contact, out of zone contact rate being up, and that's not a great thing to be relying on. And so I am concerned that strikeout rate could get worse if he doesn't make some changes to his plate discipline. Now, he has had 50 plate appearances. None of this is definitive by any means, but we do look early on, or I look early on, for things like chase rate, zone swing rate, because those can often be evidence of intentional decisions a player has made to make a change. And those are things that they can just change, right? Like, you know, oh, I'm going to hit for more power. You can't just go out and suddenly hit for more power. You have to like work on that and address it. But like, I'm going to be more aggressive at swinging the bat, or I'm going to be less aggressive and I'm going to chase less. Like, that is a thing a player has more control over. And so we're seeing some concerning numbers there. I would also add that he has a 31.3% line drive rate, which is insane. It's great. Like, you love to see a guy hitting that many line drives. That's not a sustainable number. And it's not a number. So when we look at WOBA versus ex-WOBA, a guy with a really high line drive rate is going to show a very high ex-WOBA. That doesn't mean that ex-WOBA is sustainable. Right, because as the line drive rate comes down, the ex-WOBA on his batted balls will also come down, and that'll have a negative impact moving forward. So, throwing all that out there. That said, his average exit velocity is up, his hard hit rate is up, his barrel rate is way up. Like, there are meaningful improvements here above what was already a pretty good season last year. Not great, but pretty good, especially in the second half. And so I'm excited. I think I want to see him, like, I'd like to see him chasing less moving forward, or swinging in the zone more often, or something that suggests that he's, you know, if he's being more aggressive, be more aggressive. That's fine. But I really like what I'm seeing overall, but I think there are some, like, he's not going to maintain this. It's going to come down. And the question is, how far is it going to come down? Last year, he ended the season with a 306 WOBA. His second half WOBA last year was, hold on, I had it here a moment ago. Now I got to find it again. 1 second. I'm almost there. His second half WOBA was 313. Which is still not great for fantasy. It's fine for 5x5 because you throw in all those steals, and hey, that's wonderful. For other formats where steals aren't as important, it's not as good. But an improvement from that up to 325, 330 would be great for a middle infielder, and he's showing the ability to do way more than that. And so I'm really, really intrigued. I just think, like, I'm tempering the expectations from, oh, I can see first round upside. I still don't really see the first round upside. I don't think that level of upside is there, but there's a lot more upside than I think what a lot of people expected a month ago, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I mean, the swinging stuff is definitely concerning. I guess my hope is that the strikeout rate, if those things normalize, and that explains why the strikeout rate is so bad, as opposed to the strikeout rate is bad because he's now doing those things and this is a part of his game. I think so much what it comes down to with Abrams right now is the sample size, right? And we're just going to start to see more plate appearances. But you're right, it's unsustainable if he continues to strike out at the rate that he's striking out at. So time will tell.
Yeah. Even if the strikeout rate comes down, like that line drive rate's going to come down, there's going to be some stuff that settles. The thing is, settling from an almost 400 WOBA from a middle infielder, like, he can regress quite a long ways and still be super, super valuable.
Right.
So, you know, he's not going to maintain what he's doing. But I think you're right. I think the big question going forward is, does the plate discipline stabilize more towards where it was last year? Or does he have a strikeout problem that he had seemingly solved and now it's back? Like, that's sort of the big question for me. The other stuff, like, he's not going to hit this many line drives. That's going to slow down. Like, there's things like that. But the things I'm tracking going forward would be the plate discipline and the pull rate. If he can improve the plate discipline and keep the pull rate, I'm going to get really excited.
For what it's worth, he has never been a strikeout issue guy.
Yeah.
You know, he had a 23% in AAA, but that was in 35 plate. So just completely ignore that. he's never had a strikeout rate north of 20%, and here he is sitting at 26. So hopefully that comes down. I mean, look, age 22 season, 18 homers, 47 steals, and he's shown positive signs and negative signs so far this year. So hopefully he just squares up that strikeout rate and we get some elite production. My teams would be very grateful right now.
So I am I'm going to jump to a guy who I'm not so sure I'm excited about. And so this is more a conversation I want to have because I'm a little bit perplexed by what is happening with Jesse Winker. And Jesse Winker is a guy who for years I was really high on. I expected a bounce back last year because I thought he would be healthy. He was out of Seattle. He was in a better park. Like, things just seemed better. It was not better. It was much, much worse. Last year was a total disaster. And I mean, this is a guy who from 2017 to 2021 was one of the best hitters in baseball. Just purely one of the best hitters in baseball. Great plate discipline, hit the ball hard. One of the best hitters in the game. 2022, he falls off tremendously. His 2022 WOBA was 313, which is the same thing that CJ Abrams had in the second half last year, which we just talked about not being necessarily that good, especially since Winker doesn't steal bases. And then when I thought he bounced back in 2023, it was down to 269, just a disaster of a season for him. This year in the early going, he has a 454 WOBA. He has been, if not the best, one of the best hitters in the game, and if, by that measure. But there's some weird stuff going on under the hood. So one thing, he has a 62.5% ground ball rate. That's a lot of ground balls. That also helps to explain why he only has one home run despite having this insane overall line. He's got a 419 BAPIP despite not a particularly high line drive rate.
Or sprint speed.
So you think, okay, maybe they're... What?
Or sprint speed.
Or sprint speed, right? It's not like he's beating out a bunch of infield hits. Like, he's hitting grounders and getting hits. So you think, okay, maybe he's just smoking grounders, right? He's hitting 105 mile per hour grounders every time up, and they're getting through because you hit the ball that hard, it gets through. His average exit velocity is 86.6. That would be a new career low. His max EV is 106.3. That would be a new career low. His barrel rate is up a little bit, but only up a little bit compared to last year. It's down from his best years and even down from his unimpressive 2022. His hard hit rate is up a little bit from last year, basically equal to his bad 2022. Like, he isn't making good contact. He's making bad contact. He's not hitting the ball hard, and he's hitting it on the ground, and it's working. And so I'm just not totally sure what to make of him. Now, there are good things here. Number one, his strikeout rate, which had ballooned up to 25.9, right? We talked about how at his best, this guy was, Winker was as good as anyone at plate discipline, regularly walking at or above 10%, regularly keeping a strikeout rate down 15, 17%. It ballooned up to 25.9%, the strikeout rate did last year. He still walked 13.2% of the time, but he struck out a ton. This year, Winker's got the strikeout rate down to 15.7%. That matches his walk rate. He has both walked and struck out 8 times. He's also been hit by 3 pitches. That is not something that's been part of his game. And I know that seems like a weird thing to say, like, oh, that's not, you know. But there are guys who are good at getting, yeah, totally. There are guys who are good at that. Winker has been hit by pitches. He was hit 9 times in 2021. He was hit 8 times in 2019. Other than that, it's been 4, 5, 2, like, he doesn't get hit by a ton of pitches. So 3 hit by pitches. He's on like a 30 hit by pitch pace. And that seems like a crazy thing to point out, but it's holding up his WOBA at some level. Right? It's like he got 3 bonus walks that he didn't earn and that are not likely to continue. Now, maybe something's changed. Maybe he's moved closer to plate. I haven't taken a closer look. So, like, maybe he will keep getting hit by that many pitches. He has also, I said, he doesn't steal bases. He's got 2 steals and hasn't been caught. So there's some like things going on that are just a little surprising. And I don't know. He's chasing more than he has every year except for 2021. It's the second highest chase rate of his career. He is swinging in the zone less than he ever has at any time in his career. His contact rate is below his career average. I just don't know what I am looking at here because I'm seeing a guy who has like a high BAPIP despite not hitting the ball well. He's got these 3 random hit by pitches that are inflating his numbers. But we also know that, like, he's a really good hitter at his core if he's healthy and things haven't fallen apart for him. And he's 30. It's not like he's, like, 35, right? It feels like he's been around a long time. And so you think of him as, like, oh, he's been injured. He's been down for a couple years. He's probably he really doesn't necessarily have to be in his decline phase of his career. Like, if he bounces back this year and actually posts a, like, 360, 370 type WOBA like he was doing easily earlier in his career, right? He was, you know, up until 2022, up until that collapse, he had a career 379 WOBA. If he gets back to, like, 360, 370, there's no reason to think he can't keep doing that for the next few years. So from a keeper league perspective, he's really interesting because there's no reason to think he's old. He's not. But I don't know that I believe in anything he's done in the 51 plate appearances he's had so far. So I'm just not really sure what to make of it. So that was my long-winded way of saying, Pete, should I be adding Jesse Winker?
So I'm glad you kind of ended with the age piece, because my jaw almost dropped when I saw that Jesse Winker is only 30 years old. Like, when he was playing for the Reds, was he like 15? Because that's how long ago it feels. But
yeah, I know. He came up at 23. He was young, but not 15.
Right. So this is a guy who has not only had his trouble with lefties, which is still there, but also has a really hard time staying on the field. So I hesitate to even jump too deep in with Jesse Winker, because I want to see him stay in the field for, you know, a month and a half at this point before I even have any kind of assessment. I think so much of these weird numbers is such a cop-out for a lot of guys, but in this particular case, I think it is just like fun with small sample sizes. Just like, what the heck is going on here? The ground ball rate is out of control. He's been hit by three pitches. What the heck is going on? I think that's kind of just all it is a sample size thing. I look at the lineup that he's in. I look at, you know, the fact that he's a really strong plate discipline guy, and those skills don't really go away at this point in your career. And so I think I see his season with the Mariners, and I guess that's just kind of what I expect if he is back and if he stays on the field this year for the Nationals. Is kind of similar to what he did in Seattle. So if we're looking at his Seattle numbers,
yeah,
that's 14 homers, you know, a 219 average. Maybe I'll expect a little bit higher, but that did come with a 344 OBP. So he is a guy who actually, kind of like his teammate Joey Gallo, who, not to spoil, I think is one of the guys you're going to talk about as well, is kind of similar in that he's going to have his formats where he really can play up as long as he stays on the field. But I don't know what to put into these crazy numbers that he's posted so far. And I say crazy in the real sense, not like like they're crazy good. They're just absurd, especially that ground ball rate. That is so weird. So I'd expect Seattle Winker. And if you get that and you're in an OBP league, I think you're actually going to be pretty happy. So maybe you should go and add him. If you're in 5x5, I'd kind of ignore him unless it's a 15-team league and he gets pretty hot.
Yeah, I'm just... So I'm looking at some of my leagues right now, and I'm going to look at my auto new leagues because those mostly do value on base percentage where he is at his best. And like, I'm just trying to figure out. So like here's an example, the keeper cut listener league. My outfield right now is, let's see, what do I have here? I've got Mookie Betts, but he's mostly been in the infield for me. I've got Spencer Steer, but he's mostly been in the infield for me. I could replace those guys and move them to the outfield by playing, well, I've been playing Andrés Giménez. He's been, so maybe that pushes one of those guys to the outfield. Geloff hasn't been that good yet. Colt Keith hasn't been that good yet. My other outfielders, Lars Nootbaar just came back. I'm feeling good about Lars. Riley Green off to a good start. Kerry Carpenter off to a good start. Teoscar Hernandez looks great. Jake Fraley, good, but a platoon guy, and who knows how sustainable that is. Ian Happ getting on base, but not doing anything else. Parker Meadows, who I was excited about, has been terrible. Willier Abreu, who I was interested in, has been terrible. That's it. That's all I've got in the outfield. And I'm looking at who sort of the free agent options are in that league in the outfield. And, I mean, there's Brandon Marsh, who is like another weird, I don't know what to make of him kind of guy. We could talk about him. He's not on the list for this episode, but he could be. Winker. And that's, I don't know, Gavin Sheets, who may or may not have a job in a week when Eloy is back. Tyler Freeman, who has not been particularly good. Esteri Ruiz, who is inexplicably in the minors. if I start looking in the minors, like maybe Joey Loperfido gets a call up soon. There just aren't a lot of options. And in that 4x4 format, I'm sort of leaning towards trying to pick up Winker cheap. Not because I necessarily believe in this, but because like I just outfield, like we knew before the season outfield was going to be thin. In some of my leagues, it feels really thin. And I guess it's worth taking a shot that maybe he can put something together. But I don't know what it's like. I can't even look at his line right now and be like, oh, if he just like fixes these two things, like,
yeah,
if he hits the ball in the air more, it's not going to help because he's not hitting it hard. So more balls in the air is just going to tank his BABIP, which is going to happen anyways, because not hard hit ground balls aren't a good way to get on base either. So like, I don't know. I may try to pick him up cheap just because I need something and he'll at least walk. And even like you said, the bad version of him is at least useful against right-handed pitchers for on-base percentage. But man, it's a weird, weird open season line. But it's fun to see him succeeding again. I always liked Winker. I'm like glad to see him doing well.
You could have told me before he got hot very recently, you could have told me he was playing in Korea and I would have believed you. So it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, since you already teased my next pick, I'll go again. All right. Welcome back. We are talking through some good news. Good news only episode of the Keeper Cut podcast. Pete Ball has given you his speech in behalf of CJ Abrams, who he's been a big fan of for a while. I talked about Jesse Winker. Now I'm going to go to Winker's teammate, Joey Gallo. And Gallo, you know, I want to feel like he's back. I do. Because I like Gallo. He's fun. Like when he's hitting the ball hard, he's exciting. He is like, he's on a 30 home run pace. That is fantastic. He's got 3 home runs in, you know, 13 games played, 55 plate appearances. A lot of the other stuff looks sort of Gallo-ish. He's got his 14.5% walk rate. His career walk rate is 14.8%. 38.2% strikeout rate. His career strikeout rate is 37.9%. His chase rate is down and way down. Last year was not 29.1%. It's been higher than that for a lot of his career. It was 28% total for his career. His chase rate is down to 19%. That's a pretty significant shift in a guy's chase rate. His swing rate in the zone is down a little bit from last year, but basically back to his career level. So 71.2% for his career, 71.4% for this year. So you've got a guy in Gallo who is being just as aggressive as ever in the zone, but not chasing nearly as much. And when he is chasing, he's making more contacts, which I'm not necessarily sure is a good thing, but it is leading to the highest contact rate of his career and therefore the lowest swinging strike rate of his career. That stuff is all very intriguing despite the still high strikeout rate, because if he can control the strikeouts like at all, then the power can possibly play up. And from a power perspective, he's got a barrel rate that is up near his peak years. It's 20%. He's at 19.7% for his career. Now his hard hit rate is down a little bit. But all in all, he kind of is starting to look like a guy who could post, you know, last year he only made it in 111 games, 332 plate appearances. Minnesota just didn't have a lot of time for him, right? They had other guys that they needed to move in. His strikeout rate was really hurting them. It was a huge problem for that lineup in Minnesota because they have a bunch of other guys who are sort of like this. And so they were just striking out a ton. Washington really has no reason not to let him play until they can trade him, I guess, right? I mean, that's got to be the end game here for them, I would think. And so if that chase rate continues to stay down and the contact rate continues to stay a little bit up, and that allows him to strike out even a little bit less and then he can play into that power, I'm intrigued. And, you know, right now he's got just a 316 WOBA, and so that looks pretty bad. But part of that is a 182 BABIP. Now, 182 BABIP is low. And yes, Joey Gallo is going to have a low BABIP, but his career BABIP is 255. Now, he is hitting a lot more fly balls, 68%. But like, I want Joey Gallo hitting fly balls. That is what you want. Get the ball in the air and hit it far. And so if Gallo is keeping up a really high fly ball rate, if his BABIP can come back to like 240, it doesn't have to come back to 255 for his career, let alone the 290 you expect from any other player. But if he can get that back up, It's going to bring up the OBP. It's going to bring up the slugging. And I'm suddenly intrigued in OBP leagues, in places where I need power. In 5x5, like that 152 batting average is still like, it's not going to come up to like even 200 probably. And so, you know, 5x5, I'm probably still staying away. But in OBP leagues where I need power, or in auto new points leagues where his walks and his power play up, yeah, I'm buying back in on Joey Gallo.
Yeah, so I'm more excited about Gallo than I am about Winker. I
100% agree. 100%.
I obviously just buy the power more, obviously, first of all. So that is something I can kind of bank with Gallo, whereas unless you're in an OBP league, there's not much you can bank with Winker. Obviously, the strikeouts are what they are with Joey Gallo, so I'm not even sure what my point is in bringing this up, but 6 of his first 8 plate appearances this season, he struck out. And I think that's inflating things a little bit. And a couple of those plate appearances were against Hunter Green, who's just going to strike guys out. He also has 2 plate appearances this year. If you really want to get into the weeds against Blake Snell, look, Joey Gallo against a tough lefty like Blake Snell, he's going to strike out. Like, that is just simply going to happen. So if you really want to get into the weeds, you can start finding reasons to get excited. Now, look, just the other day, he struck out twice against whoever Kyle Muller is over in Oakland. So, like, I'm not trying to tell you that, like, actually, Joey Gallo's strikeout rate should be 15%. Like, that's not where we're going with this. But I think there are some things you can point to that kind of explain what's happened to this point. He struck out to Mitch Keller and Ranger Suarez. He has also homered off of Mitch Keller and Ranger Suarez. So he is... In the early going, if you take away those first 8 plate appearances of the season, he is really reminding me of kind of vintage Joey Gallo. He's going to really stink against lefty. He's going to strike out a lot, but he's also going to hit for a lot of power. And you hit the nail on the head with the play time. Like, the opportunity is going to be there for the Nationals. He is a clear trade candidate if he is hitting. He can play in a couple different spots. He can be your corner outfielder. He can be a DH. He's fielding pretty well. He can be your first baseman. And I think he's going to have a lot of value in the market if he does find his way out of there. And I'm just going to use the Red Sox. I'm a Red Sox fan. He ends up with the Red Sox, and let's say he's DHing for them. Well, that's a pretty good situation to be in. So I'm not saying pick up Joey Gallo now, because in August he might be playing for another team. But he has stuff to play for. And I think we could get something out of him because of that.
Yeah, I think the thing with those first 2 games, I mean, it is always rough to be like, oh, I'm going to write off the first 2 games and 8 plate appearances. And when a guy has, you know, only played 12 games, 11, whatever it is he's played, like, the season's just started. Writing off 2 games is a lot to write off. But he only got 100 plate appearances in the second half last year. He got moved into basically a pinch hit and sometimes even a pinch run or pinch defense role for the Twins. Then he was let go in early September and didn't get picked up again. And so, yeah, I mean, yes, he had spring training, but like, he's still a little bit maybe behind everyone else. And that's a little bit more reason to be like, okay, his first 2 full speed games and longer than anyone else had to go is a little bit interesting. To feels something like, maybe I could write that off. It's hard to do right now. And he still is at like a 32.6% strikeout rate, not including those first 2 games. But 32.6 is way, way better, way, way better than 38, whatever it was, 38.2. He has a 362 WOBA if you don't count those first 2 games, where he went 0 for 8 with 6 strikeouts and had a walk. You get rid of those 2 games, he's got a 362 WOBA. Like, that's super exciting from Gallo. And while I think it's right now feels premature to be like, oh, I'm going to ignore the first 8-9 plate appearances out of 55, at 200 plate appearances, if he's continued to look the way he has for the last 46, it will be very easy to write off those first 2 games and be like, you know what? That was just him still getting back up to speed. So yeah, you've actually talked me more into Joey Gallo. I was already excited about Joey Gallo, and now I'm more into Joey Gallo than I was before.
You brought up that 32% strikeout rate if you take away those 2 games. And like you said, we're not even saying that's what he would be. Well, he had a 34% strikeout rate, worse than that, in 2021, and he hit 38 homers that year with an on-base percentage of .351. So you're writing him off at your own peril, potentially. So yeah, I'm with you on Gallo. I got him in a few spots. Pretty excited.
Yeah. So let's jump to your next guy. I've been going with, you know, outfield eligible types. You are sticking on the middle infield. And I got to be honest, I had like Abrams has been sort of on my radar, guy I'm interested in. Bryce Terang, I had written off. I was done with Bryce Terang, and that may have been a mistake.
Maybe. I'm going to preface this kind of similar to what you did with Jesse Winker, that I'm not completely sold yet. It's actually kind of for a similar reason as well. Bryce Terang can't hit lefties, not even getting a chance against lefties. Anyway, Bryce Terang so far this year is batting 372, 8 runs, 1 homer, 7 RBI, and 7 stolen bases. That's what should stick out to folks. That's why he's so high up on all the different player raters. Former first-round pick. He got called up last year to some degree of excitement, but it didn't feel like there was a lot of excitement around Bryce Terang. He mostly flopped. 285 OBP, 448 plate appearances. Average exit velocity was just 85.5%. He's popping up a lot, rarely barreling anything up, and that part hasn't changed. This year, it looks like it's kind of coming together. The K rate, it's never really been a problem for him, similar to Abrams. But unlike Abrams, it's really good this year. It's below 20%. His average exit velocity is up to 89.4, which catches my attention. That's up almost 5 miles an hour from last year, which is actually a little bit better than league average at this point. He still isn't really barreling much. He has one barrel so far, and his walk rate is just 6.4%. But 93rd percentile sprint speed is contributing to a 441 BABIP. Obviously unsustainable, but it may not come down as much as people would think. He's just because he's so fast and he does spread the ball all over the field. So he's hitting a lot of ground balls this year and going the opposite way 40% of the time. So that will contribute to your BABIP being pretty good. And that 40% opposite field hitting, sixth among qualified batters, only behind Brandon Marsh, Yandy Diaz, Bo Bichette, Stephen Kwan, and Leody Taveras. And all of those guys are routinely high BABIP hitters. Kwan wasn't last year, which feels like an outlier. It feels like he should have been. He was down at 293. But those guys are all high BABIP guys. And obviously that's a reason for it, for going the opposite way. I don't think he's going to provide a lot in power. Like, yeah, the exit velocity is up, but he does only have one barrel this year. Like I said, that one homer came at Great American Ballpark. It only would have been a homer in 10 of 30 MLB stadiums. He has a career high of 13 homers and 603 plate appearances at AAA back in 2022. So, like, it's exciting that the exit velocity is up, because that means he'll at least be potentially a major league hitter. That does not mean that he's all of a sudden going to start hitting for power. He also has only hit in the bottom third of the lineup pretty much all season, sitting twice against lefties. He has just 3 plate appearances against lefties. It looks like he's not really being trusted to face them. But lefty bat, excellent defense at second base, should keep him in the lineup most nights. Today he's batting sixth. That's the highest he's batted in the lineup, which, you know, that could mean we're an injury or something, you know, knock on wood, away from him entering that top third of the lineup, at least against righties, which would make his value go way up. So unfortunately, I think I've said more negative than good about Bryce Terang, but the good is that he is off to this great start. And if you're in traditional 5x5, I do think he's going to provide for you one of those hard to get categories and stolen bases. And he certainly has to this point anyway with 7.
Yeah. And I think it's not just 7, it's 7 without being caught. Right. So he has the green light to go and is good at it. And I think that also matters in things like auto new leagues, where, you know, guys who get caught a lot, like the, it's 1.9 points. Double check and make sure I have my math right, but I think it's 1.9 points in auto new point leagues for a stolen base. Yeah. And negative 2.8 for a caught stealing, which makes sense, right? It is worse to get caught than it is to be successful. Like that, like you get, you hurt your team more by being caught stealing than you help them by successfully stealing. And so a lot of times you have guys who, you know, they have 7 stolen bases, but they've been caught 3 times. And from a points perspective, they really haven't added anything. They haven't done enough to help. But 7 stolen bases without being caught in that points format is another 13.3 points over 12 games. That's literally adding a point per game to his total, more than a point per game to his total. So that has real value, and it changes the equation for him in those formats, because if he can continue to basically steal a base, you know, if he's going to be a 70 stolen base kind of guy, and that seems like a crazy number because it's been so long since we've, you know, before last year in the bigger bases, 70 was just like outlandish number. If he's playing almost every game against righties and occasional games against lefties, maybe he could steal 70 bases. And if he does that with minimal caught stealings, he could add a point per game to his total, which really lowers the bar for how good of a hitter he needs to be valuable in those formats. Now, I think you did raise some of the concerns. He still does not hit the ball very hard. He does not barrel the ball very often. There is a reason his ex-WOBA is still just 292 this year. That said, I do think he carries a high BAPIP. I do think that he does a good job of putting the ball in play. If he could, like, he's increased his contact rate quite a bit this year, and if he could maintain that and continue to just keep the strikeouts down and keep the ball in play, that would be great. He's just not going to add much of anything else. I don't expect a particularly high average, even with the high BAPIP. Maybe he gets up to like 260, 270, which obviously helps, but we're not talking about like a 300 hitter type guy, despite the 372 so far. He doesn't walk enough to really help in on base leagues a whole lot. It's basically just speed, and that speed may be enough that even in auto new points formats, he can, you know, if he's a 3.5 point per game hitter and ends up at 4.5 points per game total because of those stolen bases, that'll play. That'll play in your middle infield. So I think he's doing enough to show he belongs in the lineup, which is the number one thing he had to do to have value, because we know the speed is there.
Yeah, he reminds me, I think you're basically getting from Bryce Terang what you were hoping to get out of Nico Horner. And so those two players might end up being a lot closer than we anticipated. I still, in a vacuum, like Horner more, but he's only let off twice this season. Otherwise, he's bat seventh every single day. And that has led to him not stealing. I don't know if it's a direct correlation, but he has not been stealing as much batting seventh in the lineup, whereas Terang is just this young guy trying to make it on the scene. And so he is doing everything he can, and he is stealing a lot of bases despite hitting in the bottom third of the order. So both guys who, like, you know, can bat for high BABIPs. I think Terang and Horner might end up pretty close. So it's not a bad place to be in if you're rostering Bryce Terang and you had Nico Horner coming out of drafts, because you might just need to flip the two.
Yeah, I may have to look into that a couple places. I do have some Horners that I'm sort of, I don't know about. Let's jump to my next guy, and we're going to move to a pitcher. We've mostly talked hitters. We've only talked hitters so far. But I am going to go, this is a little bit like your Abrams pick in that it's a guy I've been high on for a while. Unfortunately, I don't really have as much exposure to him as I wish I did. But through three starts and 17.1 innings pitched, Reed Detmers has a 1.04 ERA. That is good. And before you tell me what everyone's like, oh yeah, ERA, everyone knows ERA is noisy. Yeah, sure. 1.46 FIP, 2.37 XFIP, 2.40 Sierra, a 31.3% strikeout rate minus walk rate. Like, you pick the metric, Reed Detmers looks awfully good. He is striking out 40.6% of hitters he's faced. That's a 13.5 K per nine. That's good. That's really good.
I was just saying, that's absurd. I mean, you said that number, yeah, and I just croaked.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And, you know, as will happen with any pitcher off to a good start, like, his BAPIP is a little low. It's 258. That's not crazy low. And even when it corrects, that's why the FIPX, FIPCR are still looking good. His velocity last year took a big jump to 94.3. It stayed at 94.1 so far this year. He has made some small adjustments, I would say, in his pitch mix. So last year, he was throwing his four-seamer about 43% of the time. This year, it's up to 50% of the time. Now, that feels contrary to what we're seeing from a lot of other pitchers out there that are going more breaking stuff. He's gone more to his heat. His slider, which he was throwing 30% of the time, slider, which he was throwing 30% of the time, is down to 19% of the time. His curve and change are both 15% last year. Last year, his curve was 19. His change was only 5. And so what you're really getting is he has taken his slider, curve, and change. He's throwing them all a little bit less as a group, right? His off-speed and breaking stuff, he's throwing less as a group because he's throwing the fastball more, but he's throwing them more evenly, right? So the 15% change, 15% curve, 19% slider, instead of 5%, 19%, 30%. I don't know if that's making him less predictable or if it's just noise. I'm not really sure what it is, but it's an interesting change given how effective he has been. And he's really been, I mean, he's been effective on basically all of his pitches, with the one exception being the slider that he's throwing less. So the slider, and even that, the WOBA against the slider is 321. The XWOBA is 340. Everything else is way down. He doesn't have another WOBA over 200. He doesn't have another XWOBA over 260 on any pitch. Last year, his four-seamer was getting hit hard, and this year it's not getting hit hard at all. The exit velocity is down. The launch angle on that is down. So I probably need to dig in. I probably should have already dug in a little bit more to figure out like what's changed with that four-seamer. And maybe I can start to pull some stuff up while you respond to this. But I'm seeing some really encouraging signs from a pitcher that I was already high on. And so, you know, maybe this is just confirmation bias, right? I liked him. He's doing well, so he must be good. But he's been good, and I like him.
So you brought up, you know, the slider being a little bit less effective this year, but I think in a way it's been more effective. And I think it's setting up his fastball a little bit better. So if you look at the separation and the velocity between the four-seamer and the slider this year and last year, you know, the four-seamer velocity has not really changed that much, but his slider, he's thrown basically 4 miles an hour slower, a little bit more than 4 miles an hour slower, or 3 miles an hour slower. I think that's given him a little bit more separation in his pitches. You know, that terrific outing against the Red Sox, everything was working well for him that night. And I think his sequencing, and I'm guessing here, because we don't have enough really to go on, but the sequencing and the separation in those pitches, I think, has allowed him to play up a little bit. I'm obviously excited about the player. He's another guy who's a former top prospect. He has gone on stretches like this in the past. So, you know, we want to see, we haven't had the ability to do that yet because the season's so young, but we want to see him sustain this over a long period of time. He's gone at least six innings now in two of his, how many outings has he had? Two of his three. Okay. So still, that's not something that a lot of pitchers can say they've been able to do. The walks are still up a little bit. So there's still some signs of the old Reed Detmers in there, but that one outing, particularly that one against the Red Sox where he was just unbeatable, was awesome. The strikeouts with Reed Detmers, whether he has an ERA over four or an ERA under three, the strikeouts are always going to be there. So I'm not sure that's the indicator. But again, it's the separation of velocity between those two pitches that have piqued my interest.
Yeah, he also, so I'm looking now at that four-seam ready, is throwing more. And I noticed, I pulled up Nick Pollock's SP roundup from the last time Detmer started, which I think was just yesterday or 2 days ago. And he noted the IVB, the induced vertical break or vertical movement, basically, in that fastball is up quite a bit. It was 15.2 inches last year. It's up to 17.7 this year. That's a pretty significant change. And that is really interesting, right? He is throwing a better fastball than he did in the past. He's using it more, and it's working pretty well. And so I'm pretty excited. I feel really good about what he's doing, and you know, these may be small changes, but they're changes that seem to be working for him, and we know he's got the talent. And so I'm in on Detmers. This is one of the first ones for me where I, like, I'm not really qualifying this with anything. Like, I want Detmers on my rosters where I can get him. And if he's still available, I'm trying to pick him up. If he's available in trade, I'm trying to trade for him. Like, I'm excited about Reed Detmers.
Yeah, he's a buy high guy. He's going to cost you an arm and a leg. We're not going to go down the road of pitcher injuries, but he's one of the few pitchers that is healthy and is nasty right now. So he's going to be a hard guy to pluck. But if someone in your league doesn't believe in him, I'm with Chad on this one. Go get Reed Detmers.
So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we've got another pitcher who may also be a buy high and is healthy, and we're going to go into our homer picks of the week to finish this out. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We're talking good news only this week.
Good vibes.
And we've gone through a bunch of interesting names, and Pete, you know, you talked about TJ Abrams before, who we know you've liked for a while. I talked about Reed Detmers, who I've been high on for a while. We talked about Jesse Winker and Joey Gallo, who we both liked in the past. It wouldn't be a good news episode of the Keeper Cup podcast if you didn't get a chance to talk about Tanner Houck. And this isn't just us trying to force fit your guy in here. He belongs. He's been incredible, mostly because he doesn't walk anybody anymore. Fascinating.
Yeah. So I love Tanner Houck. I have him in a lot of spots. You know, when you have a player like this who you're just in on, you end up who's, you know, kind of cast aside and not new, you end up with a lot of $1 shares of him. And I have one or two of those, which is obviously great. Like, I'm excited about that. At the same time, I actually think he might be a sell high, which I know is tough to do because of the pitcher market in the current state of it. I'm not convinced that Tanner Houck is out of the woods. So two things about Houck going into the season, right? Alex Cora said that thing about his velocity going into the year, how, you know, Tanner's velocity is up more than any other pitcher on the team. That didn't really play out in spring training, and it hasn't really played out this year. His velo basically looks the same, and it's not like he had like velocity issues. It wasn't like a concern. Like,
down, right?
Marginally, but I'm seeing, if at all,
I'm seeing 91.6 on Fangraphs for his fastball velocity versus 93.9 last year.
He has thrown exactly one four seamer, and that four seamer he threw at 91.6, and that's kind of like it looks like a philosophy from our new pitching coach Andrew Bailey. The Red Sox, I believe this is still the case, have thrown the least amount of four-seam fastballs so far this season. And hey, look, we have our warts. We're not a very good team, but our pitching to this point has been good. So the approach has been solid. And in Houck's case, not that big of a deal. I mean, his fastball wasn't great before. But the velocity thing, I think we can already kind of write that off. There's not, you know, much of a velocity change. It looks pretty much...
Just to add to that, like, you're right. It's just the one... four seamer, and yes, that is down from 93.9 last year to 91.6, but it's literally one pitch. He throws two primary fastballs. Yes, he throws a sinker, which he threw at 93.4 last year, is at 93.3 this year, and he throws a cutter. That's the one that is maybe a little concerning, but he's only thrown 19 of those, I guess. But that was 91.3 last year. It's down to 87.2, but maybe that's a good thing because it's changing the... it's giving him a wider range in his pitches. I don't know. But that sinker being 93.3 after being 93.4 is probably the most telling number that his velocity is stable.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't like this big leap forward in velocity that maybe that comment led people to think he would actually have. And then the other thing with Tanner Houck, which has always been the case, is like the third pitch. You know, the third pitch, is he going to be able to get through third time in the order, or so on and so forth? And look, he's pitched well so far this year, minus that last outing against the Angels. But after the first outing where he dominated Oakland, where it's beginning to look like anybody with a pulse can dominate Oakland, you know, the splitter usage was up and he got some swings and misses on it. And it was like, oh, okay. You know, three pitches were working for Tanner Houck, and look at the results. He pitched pretty well against the Angels the next time out, and then he got rocked after that. So I'm not sure there's been enough to suggest anything is different. So if people are looking at Tanner Houck as if he's this new different pitcher, he might be. I don't think he's shown enough to tell us that he actually is. And so I might be interested in selling high on him if there are people buying high. What I wouldn't be concerned about is if you look at the swinging strike rate, it's way down for him. That's a sample size thing. He's faced the Angels twice and Oakland, so certainly not good offenses. But believe it or not, the Angels have the fifth best swinging strike rate in baseball so far this season. So the fact that Houck has faced them twice out of three outings, I'm not so concerned about that. I think he'll still be better than a strikeout per inning kind of pitcher. I just don't think he has shown enough for us to say, like, here it is, the Tanner Houck breakout is actually happening, let's go. And because there's such a panic about pitching, if there are people that think that's the case, I don't know. I feel like you might be able to bring in something pretty nice for Houck. So I hate to say it, and this is supposed to be good vibes, and it is good vibes. Look, Tanner Houck is off to a great start, and I've been in on this guy for like 45 years, so it's about time. But it may not be as great as it looks on the surface.
So let me ask a question for you. My CBS head-to-head that I've talked about on the show many times before, one of our categories is strikeout to walk rate. Houck has never been a particularly low walk guy, but through his 17 and two-thirds innings this year, he has just two walks. He's also hit two hitters, which is a pretty high number for him, but just two walks versus those 19 strikeouts. That's a really valuable stat in that league. Does that shift your thinking, or do you think, like, how real is this control from him? I mean, is he going to be a low walk guy? Is he going to have George Kirby's control, or is this just a...
no. Look, I, like, I don't want to water it down just because of quality opponent, because we have to talk about something. But both the Angels and Oakland are bottom half of baseball in walk rate. And so I think just how getting ahead in the count, looking good, off to a good start, like we said, has certainly helped in that regard. But, you know, guys aren't going to take a walk off of you if they can get a hit instead. He gave up 12 hits in his last outing. So if he has to all of a sudden to accommodate not giving up so many hits, now have to throw outside the zone a little bit more, is that going to lead to more walks? It certainly could. So, I mean, it sticks out, and it's a positive sign, right? The positive vibes episode, absolutely. Tanner Houck isn't walking anybody. What a great sign. At the same time, you know, he did just get hit all around the ballpark his last time out. So I'm not, and it was their second time seeing him, so maybe that was part of it too. But Tanner Houck is not out of the woods and all of a sudden a reliable pitcher in fantasy. I think he still has some work to do here.
Yeah, and I think his zone rate is way up, which helps explain why the walks are so far down. But there are, I haven't watched him pitch this year, so I'm going off what others who have watched him have said. But one of the things I've heard is some concerns about his command, that yes, he's throwing it in the zone, but throwing it in the zone and not hitting your spots is sometimes worse than throwing it outside the zone. If you miss outside the zone, you might walk guys. If you miss inside the zone, you give up 12 hits in 5 2/3 innings, as you mentioned. So, yeah, it's a little... That walk rate looks really good, but it's a little bit of a double-edged sword if it's just a result of his command, you know, resulting in a lot of hits. But yeah, I don't know. I'm intrigued. I'm probably going to hold on to him in that CBS league, at least for now. That's also, I think, one of the only places I have him. I have to double check. But I'm not going to ditch him yet, because if that walk rate does stay down, if he keeps throwing in his zone that much, he's just so valuable in that format and in other formats where walks matter a lot. If you play in an auto new Sabre points league where there's no negative value for hits for pitchers, but walks matter a lot and strikeouts matter, like, he can be really interesting there, because you'll take a line of 5 2/3 innings without a home run, with no walks and two strikeouts, because those hits just don't matter. So know your format, because it makes a big difference with a guy like this. Yeah. So to close things off, I said we were entering the homer pick of our homer pick section of the show. Pete sort of, you know, unpicked his homer pick, but I am not going to unpick my homer pick. My homer pick, we're going back to the position players. Josh Naylor is off to a great start. If you were curious, and I know you were, you've been wondering this all day, I'm sure. If I go to Fangraphs and I filter to guys whose primary position is first base, and I sort by WOBA, your number one hitter among all first basemen in all of the game of baseball is Josh Naylor. Now, Michael Bush is second. Salvador Perez is fifth. There's some other names on here that, you know, maybe it's early. Maybe he's not actually the best first baseman in baseball. I'm not here to tell you that he's not the best first baseman in baseball, though. I'm just here to point out that Josh Naylor, in the early going, 341 average, 446 on base, 682 slugging, 4 home runs, 9 runs, 10 RBIs already. But let's get into, you know, what's actually interesting about Naylor so far this year. And there's a couple of things that stand out related to his plate discipline. The first thing is, you will notice immediately if you look at his player page, 8.9% strikeout rate and a 14.3% walk rate. There's always guys out there who walk more than they strike out. They're not usually power hitters. And so having a guy who can hit for good power, has 4 home runs already and can do that, is impressive. And he's doing it by, I think, leaning into his strengths. And so Naylor has always been a guy who he likes to swing the bat. What he has done this year is significantly dropped his chase rate from 42.6% last year to 32.3% this year. It's 38.2 for his career. So pretty significant drop even by his career numbers, and significantly increasing his Z swing. So his in zone swing rate is 88.4%. That's probably unsustainably high, but he's being really aggressive in the zone and really patient out of the zone. And so all of that moving around, his overall swing rate is actually very similar to what it's been in the past, but he is swinging at better pitches, at least based on where they are in or out of the zone. He's actually making less contact this year, which I think is something that will improve as the season goes on and may even help that strikeout rate a bit more, which seems kind of crazy. But he has also increased ever so slightly his exit velocity. His hard hit rate has stayed high and his barrel rate is at 12.2%. That would be a career high. I think that probably will come down. He's also benefited from an increase in his launch angle. So he has, over the course of his career, year by year, going back to 2020, the year he came over to Cleveland initially, he had a 24.7% fly ball rate. The next year was up to 31.9, the next year 33.7, then 36.8 last year. It was up to 39% this year. So we are seeing him lean into his ability to hit the ball hard, to lay off of pitches he shouldn't swing at, and to be aggressive when he can swing, and it's really paying off. The other big thing with Naylor, we've talked about with Winker, we talked about it with Terang, like these left-handed hitters who don't get to face left-handed pitchers, that's been an issue in the past for Naylor. Over his career, he had, you know, in 2020 was a shortened season, but like 2021, he had a 44 WRC plus against lefties. 2022 was 55. The Guardians sort of stuck with him and trusted him to improve. And he has. Last year, he had a 127 WRC plus against lefties. This year, it's 170. Now, that's, I think, like 9 plate appearances this year. Yeah, it's 9 plate appearances this year. But it's only 9 plate appearances because the Guardians have not faced a ton of lefties. It's not 9 plate appearances because they're hiding him. He's going to play every day, and he's showing that he can hit lefties, which is pretty exciting. He is not going to add a ton with his legs. He did steal 10 bases last year. He has 9 in the rest of his career total. So don't expect him to suddenly steal 20 this year. He's tried once this year and he was caught. I'm going to go out on a limb right now. I'm going to say this. Last year, he had a 354 OBP, and that was a career high. No, it wasn't. Yes, it was a career high for him. He had 17 home runs. His career high was 20 in 2022. Josh Naylor is going to set career highs for on-base percentage and home runs this season. That's my stake in the ground on Josh Naylor. He's going to get up into the mid-20s for home runs, and he's going to push a 360 on-base percentage, because I think these changes are a sign of him growing into some of his strengths. He also, like, maybe this seems like a minor thing, but like, he just seems really happy right now, which I think we sometimes downplay with players, the psychological side of things and how are they feeling and stuff like that. Like he talks all the time about how special it is to play with his brother. The other day, which was happened to be National Siblings Day, and Bo and Josh both hit home runs in the same inning, and then Bo drove in Josh for a walk-off winning run. And like, he just seems to be really energized by that. He's always been a high emotion player. And I think he's just in a really good place right now. He's doing really smart things at the plate. I'm super excited about what Josh Naylor's doing. So there it is. Career high in home runs, career high in on-base percentage coming from Josh Naylor.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I think he's on pace, obviously, to do both. And I think a lot of what you outlined there, like the baseline skills for him seem so safe that I don't think the floor is that low. And when you factor in the age, he's just 26 years old. Like it's not hard to see him continuing to have a career season. Obviously, you know, we're only 2.5 weeks in, 3 weeks in, but I don't think that's a hard thing to envision. And with the stolen, I don't think it's a coincidence last year. You know, you brought up the stolen bases. He attempted once, he was thrown out, and you know, his sprint speed is in the 8th percentile. Like he's not going to be some stolen base guy, but I also don't think he's going to be a zero. I don't think it's a coincidence that he's an aggressive baseball player. And he's a high energy baseball player, and they changed the rules to benefit guys who want to steal last year. And all of a sudden he ended up with 10. So I don't think he's just a complete nothing in that regard, although there might not be much to say about it from there. I don't expect the runs to really be that good. I know Cleveland's off to a hot start. There's not much happening behind him in that lineup, but he is a fixture in the cleanup spot so far this season. And I don't expect that to change at all. And who knows, maybe Chase DeLauder gets called up, something like that, and the lineup gets even a little bit juicier. But you're right, he's primed to have a career season. And so I don't know if he's going to finish as the number one first baseman, but is he going to finish as a top five first baseman? I think that is well within the cards, especially in OBP league. So yeah, only good vibes for Josh Naylor in the early going here.
Yeah, right guy to end on, because I'm just feeling really good about this one. And we said we were going to have a good news only, good vibes only episode. Yeah, Josh Naylor. He's a vibes guy too, so he's a perfect fit. Perfect cap for this episode.
Sure. So for sure.
Just as a reminder, we went through, went through Jesse Winker, CJ Abrams, Joey Gallo, Bryce Terang, Reed Detmers, Tanner Houck, and then ended on Josh Naylor. All off to great starts. Slightly different outlooks moving forward, maybe for some of these guys, but a lot of guys that we're really interested in. I'm probably going to go start some auctions because there's a couple guys we've talked about that are intriguing to me. So, yeah, I'm going to go get some auctions started, get some bids placed, and we'll be back with you next week.